Hi, this is Dallas Ingram, one of your hosts for the Wildlife Her podcast. Jess and I are back this week to talk a little bit about recreational mowing syndrome and some summer management activities. We hope you join us for episode 8. Thank you.
This podcast was a mess.
Welcome back to the Wildlife Herb Podcast. We are recording this late June of 2024. And so since we're in the middle of the summer months, decided we would kind of do a quick overview of some management practices, activities that should be done at this time of the year. We get those questions a lot, so we want to kind of keep everybody updated and kind of on the schedule on what you should be doing to improve habitat for various wildlife on your property. And one of the things that comes up, especially this time of year, is mowing.
Our favorite subject.
Yes. Yep. So a little bit of a rant. Mowing in general is not a good practice when you're managing uplands because you wind up creating a lot of thatch. That thatch buildup is not great for a lot of species like quail that can't scratch well. The food kind of gets underneath all that thatch, plus then it shades out a lot of things that are trying to grow back up through it. So mowing's not great. Sometimes it's good for hardwood control.
Right. But, I mean, timing is terrible right now. And this is where I'm going to rant a little bit because I've been talking to some landowners. They're very excited to hear their birds. So, yes, it took me some time to go visit their properties. They probably called me late middle spring. But, you know, we're all busy. So they were on the schedule, and I finally got out there. And, oh, man, we haven't heard the birds in the last couple weeks. And I'm like, because you mowed. Like, you have mowed everywhere. That's why you were hearing them a lot, because you waited to mow. And they were like, wait, what? They're gone. Yeah. And my mother, she doesn't really listen to this podcast, I don't think. Maybe. Sorry, Mom. But we're going to go there. She mows. And we'll be really excited. I'll be hearing birds. I mean, I'll be on conference calls for work, and they'll think that I'm playing Bob White calls in the background. I'm like, no, that's my backyard.
Yeah.
And until she mows, or my dad mows, and then it's all over. I haven't heard birds for a while now since they mowed the roadsides. They mowed. It's just, it
the
drives
cover's
me
gone.
Crazy. And you lose other birds, too.
Yeah.
It's not just, you know, Bob White. It's they've just had to go other places, or they're going in the woods where they don't want to be.
Predator habitat.
Exactly. Predator habitat. There's not much to eat, you know, and hopefully they can re-nest.
Right.
But you just wiped out probably their first attempt.
Which is usually the better attempt.
Yep. So I'm like, me and Tom a little fired up right now about it. Probably don't need to go on about it, but stop mowing.
Yes. Yes. The recreational mowing syndrome, just this time of year is prevalent. Everybody wants everything to look nice, but it's not the time to do it. This past week, we found two fawns.
Yeah.
But would not have seen them if we hadn't been walking and, you know, stumbled upon them. But if you had been mowing, and these were little fawns, dropped in a few days. They weren't getting up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, the other thing about mowing now is the pollinators.
Yes.
So we're not going to have that food source moving through the summer. And a lot of people think that, no, it's summertime. Food is abundant. It's not if you mow it down, because that insect needs to gain a critical mass in the grasses for the birds and other animals to have anything to eat. And never mind the fawns and the deer are relying on, you know,
all that new browse.
New browse is the most nutritious.
That's right.
Turkey, poults.
Yes. Bugging, seeds, all that good stuff.
It's huge.
Yep.
Yeah. So there's lots of reasons not to mow. And if I think of it, I'll try to post the videos of, again, the second landowner I went to, they had just mowed they had just hayed, and they had just, you know, cut the hay, and they were had already tethered it, and the Bob White were just panicking, running everywhere, out in the open, could see the hawks, and I'm just like, these quail have no prayer out there.
Right.
They're just, I could have walked up to them, and they're wild birds, by the way.
Yeah.
Just,
it was frustrating. You totally rearranged everything. And, you know, we understand that, you know, farming practices have to happen, but if there's ways you can delay
Yep.
or
Or leave some strips.
Right,
leave some strips. At least give them a chance. Granted, you're not going to know where the nests are.
No.
There's no way.
No.
But at least you could get them to that cover and give them a new nesting spot if you happen to wipe it out.
Right.
Then you didn't, if you didn't wipe the hens out in the process of haying. But, you know, if you set up that habitat ahead of time, then they have somewhere to go because they're habitual.
Yeah. And if you are mowing, how you mow makes a difference.
Yep.
So, you know, mow it in a way that you're pushing those animals away from the area you're going to mow next, giving them a chance to get out of, you know, not mow in the little square to your basically cornering them down into the middle.
Yep, putting the bars out front.
Right. And so there's different things you can do to reduce your impacts, but ground nesting birds, turkeys, quail, a lot of other songbirds, fawns, rabbits.
Oh, rabbits.
Yeah, lots of little bunnies right now. So a lot of things have little babies on the ground or nest on the ground, or it's just their cover to reduce their predation. So can you, a bit of a rant for us, because this is something that we deal with a whole lot. And, you know, we all know we want to keep it clean because, you know, something we're dealing with is, especially around the house, snakes, you don't want it overgrown.
Right.
Because you want to keep the snakes away. And you can have those areas that you keep nice and clean. Mow your trails and your roads if you need to, but just don't go crazy mowing all your woodlands. If you can leave some areas in those fields, the critters will thank you for it.
Yeah, and we need to redefine what we think looks good also.
Right.
Because once you start appreciating and find a biologist or get help to identify some of the plants out there, because once you appreciate what you're seeing, you'll start seeing all these really cool flowers flowering if you let them.
Yes.
You will have flowers throughout the summer and even into the fall, especially here in the southeast.
Right.
And
it's great for flowers.
Yes. Like, I think some of our spring flower or our fall flowers are better than the fall tree color changing.
Yes.
I mean, it's beautiful. And, you know, the native plants, and when you give them a chance, it's very pretty.
Right.
And it might look like a mess to people because you've not learned about what's in there. And once you appreciate it and see it, it's very pretty. And that's what we've been doing on our farm. So I can convince people to do things a little bit differently is I'm pointing that stuff out or putting signs up. People are like, oh, wow, that looks good now.
Yeah.
It's like you just needed to give it a couple of years.
Yeah. And it does take a while. I know on our place, you know, we've got some young longleaf that are, I think this is their fifth year. And when they were first planted, I went in and just scattered some seed that I had collected or some seed packets someone had given me here and there, just some native stuff and that I wanted to perpetuate because it had been a farm for many years. And so there was not a lot of diversity on the landscape. And so hadn't been seeing a whole lot. And then this year I'm starting to see a lot more little flowers starting to pop up. And they're in areas where I know I dropped some seed because I purposely put them in certain areas.
So you know.
But two, I did it kind of uphill. So hopefully they'll spread downhill easier. I know they're not going to spread uphill real easy. So we are starting to see just little things here and there. And it takes a little time. So don't get impatient with it.
I mean, we're talking about 2 to 3 years before you start seeing it. And the other thing, too, is you don't have to spend a ton of money on seed. You know, the seed bank is remarkable. Like, even places that have been farmed for the history of the family. So, we're talking 100 years sometimes. The seed bank still comes back. They're just waiting to get that chance.
Yeah, you'll find a few places that the seed bank's been depleted one way or another. But there's surely something good. We were on a farm it was the end of last week. And the ragweed, it was a cattle farm, lots of hay, Bermuda, Bahia, that sort of thing. But in areas where he would do disking, there was just tons of ragweed, which are great habitat for quail. And even though the majority of the property was hay field or cattle pasture, actually, there was a couple pair of bobwhite on the edges of those ragweed areas and the woodlines. So they're holding on in these areas, but we can definitely create things and help make things better for them.
Yeah. And just since we have left some spots out, you know, the give and take on our place and on some of the landowners too, because, you know, we put up some bluebird houses and some other things, and man, they're just doing awesome now.
Yeah.
And they're sticking around. They're coming back year after year. So there's a lot of things that, I mean, that was near instant satisfaction, yeah, seeing those birds nesting and fledging.
Yeah. Insects, we don't like bugs, especially gnats down here, but there's a lot of bugs that are very important to a lot of our wildlife species, and then those plants are important to those bugs, so it all just kind of builds off of itself. But speaking of plants and unwanted things like gnats, invasive control. We've talked about invasives already. This is the time of year to really be hitting those invasives hard as they're growing. You don't want to do it. You usually don't want to do a herbicide treatment on hardwoods or invasives if you're in a drought period because the plants aren't uptaking that. Depending on what chemical you're using, you don't want to do it when your temperatures are not be spraying at the time when your temperatures are over about 90 degrees.
Yeah.
Depends on the herbicide. Some of them you're okay with, but some of them will volatilize. So that means that they're kind of like gas off as you're spraying them, and it spreads. So you get a lot of non-target damage to things, especially to hardwoods.
Accidentally nuke an area?
Yes.
We've seen that.
So I've seen some, you know, nice oaks somebody was trying to, you know, protect around the thing, and then they sprayed on a hot day, and it volatilized. And then next thing you know, half of that oak is dead, and shortly thereafter, the rest of it. So be very careful in these hot temperatures. It's not just to protect ourselves, but depending on what chemicals you're using, you want them to spray during that hot time of the day. Always, of course, watch your wind and that sort of thing. But if you've had a little rain, things are actively growing, then that's a good time to hit a lot of these invasive hardwoods or other invasive species like privet, climbing fern, chinaberry, all those sorts of things right now. It's a good time to tackle those.
Especially if you know, like maybe you're in a program or you know you're going to be planting trees in, you know, the winter, early spring.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't think that now is the time to get after it.
Right.
Just like those little sand spurs. We're getting a lot of calls, or we were. Now they're kind of going away, but we missed May. But, you know, people were complaining about it. It's like you had to break it to them that they needed to have done that in January, February.
Right.
To then.
Yep. All the little stickers that are in your yard now, it's a little late.
Yep.
That's an earlier season thing. But, again, thinking of that timing, if you're planning on planting, especially longleaf, which we like to see planted, usually around October, November, if you've got good moisture on the ground, because that gives them time to put that root growth on, get ahead of all the competition. So earlier planting of longleaf works well. But even if you're going to do winter planting of the other pine species, your site prep, you really need to be looking at that site prep. Use around July for longleaf, especially if you're going to use a soil active chemical like imazapyr.
Yep.
That's 3 months of activity usually on average in the soil, depending on your soil type.
Yeah, you want that gone before you stick those trees in the ground.
Right. You cannot put a longleaf in the ground with imazapyr. But if you're trying to control Bermuda grass.
Especially if we haven't gotten a lot of rain.
Right. And, you know, Bermuda bahia, your fescue, your pasture grasses take a lot of time to do. So if you haven't sprayed and you're needing to control those, if you haven't sprayed it already, you need to hit them now. And then you're going to get some regrowth on those pasture grasses later in the summer. Mop that up, hit them again.
Mm-hmm.
Ideally, if you have those and you're trying to plant pines, you're not going to do this till next year. You're planting. So you're hitting it this year. Probably do a soil disturbance during the wintertime to get those grasses seed exposed and then treat it all again the next year, because it's amazing how much of a seed bank you're going to have if you've had pasture grasses for a while.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, how many calls in our career have we dealt with? People plant their longleaf or even loblolly, and they've got all these grasses coming up that are competing, or they just don't know what to do with it. And it's like, well,
you're stuck.
That's when we say mow it. Sometimes you can rip a fire through it.
Yep.
But,
and we're in that situation, which we treated and then planted, and we were good for a couple of years. But over the last year or two, I'm starting to see bahia and now a few little spots of Bermuda coming in, and I can hit the bahia.
I was going to say, what about spot spraying?
Yeah, I can spot spray, but the Bermuda, all I'm doing is just kind of keeping it at bay. Yeah, you just make it mad. And burning really doesn't do anything, no. Why I try to keep it at bay is because, especially under younger trees, if you've got those pasture grasses and you light them up, grass fires are hot.
Yeah. Thermal thinning.
Right, and you will scorch and kill off some stuff. So I try to keep those pasture grasses at bay the best we can. And again, weed controlled, we didn't have them for years, but then that seed bank was heavy, mm-hmm. and they'll start to show back up again in some areas.
Well, it doesn't help either if you're around people that are mowing or haying, and that's where a lot of our pine stands are, on the edges yep. of people with doing those practices. Yep. So you're going to get it eventually.
Yep. Yeah, our neighbors had horses, and all the hay they brought in, we've got thistle and vasey grass and stuff that's coming in along the fence lines where, you know, all their stuff comes over on us. So it's a constant battle.
Thistle, yeah. I don't know how much thistle we hand dug this year.
Everywhere it showed up, and then we did a thinning in the older trees, and so that exposed the soils again, so just stuff just blew up. Mm-hmm. So it's a constant thing, and so summer is a very busy time for a lot of management practices because plants are actively growing, and this is the time of year to really hit those, and unfortunately, it's also time when a lot of people are busy,
right? So,
but you just have to find those days to kind of get ahead of it.
But it's a good time to see where you are with things and get that plan written. So if it is overwhelming, you don't know how to come up with the timing, just take a breath, call someone for help,
yep.
Reach and get that plan pulled together now, because you can identify almost everything right now, which yep. you should be able to.
Yeah.
And you can get that timing pulled together, and the time to apply for assistance is here or coming up.
Yeah, there's some invasive programs that are open now for call share. So get out there and find those. And then come in fall, you'll be opened up to a lot of the farm bill programs that also have invasive call share in those as well. So be thinking about those sort of things. Hardwoods, again, if burning is good for knocking back smaller hardwoods, you can still do some growing season burns. I know folks who are doing, you know, small patches here and there. We use, you know, if you're doing your burning in the small blocks, that 50 acre or less, you're really not impacting your nesting birds and animals as much as people think they are. Especially if you're getting hardwoods under control, you're improving that habitat, so you'll wind up having more critters in the long run. But again, smaller blocks, just a few here and there, and you can control those hardwoods with that growing season burn. Larger hardwoods that you can't control with fire, so anything over about 3 or 4 inches, you're just not going to kill it with fire.
Yeah, cut it.
You're going to have to cut it or spray it.
Treat.
Right. So yeah, hyperscore.
Those stumps.
Yes.
We're battling chinaberry. So we didn't, treat stuff the way we should.
Yeah. And when you're treating cut stump, you've only got a few hours after that stump is cut to
before it starts shutting out.
Yes. Herbicide yep. on it, so it closes up. If you don't treat it, you're going to wind up all the little resprouts. And there's a lot of our species: sweet gum, chinaberry,
Bradford pear.
Yes, some of the oaks. Those sort of things.
Didn't hear that. I said Bradford pear. Go back to our last podcast.
That's
hear
right.
about that.
Oh, the invasive podcast.
Yeah.
So those sort of things. And while you're out, if you're doing any hack and squirt to control some of those larger stems, if you've got thickets, plum thickets, wax myrtle thickets that you're using for cover for quail or deer or whatever that may be, and you're starting to get hardwoods or pines in those, now's a good time to tackle those as well. And be careful when you're in those thickets and watching for our legless friends that like to hang out in those as well. But this is a good time of year to start doing a few thicket management as you're going along. Food plots.
Yay.
So we don't recommend a lot of food plots. I don't say we don't recommend. Food plots are not the silver bullet that people
right.
sometimes think they are. You need the habitat, and then food plots are supplemental or a way to attract animals if you're hunting or just viewing wildlife.
Yeah, so a good way to focus
right.
them in on an area.
Right. Or provide some supplemental feed in an area where you don't have a lot of good natural feed. And so if you are planting food plots, you still got some time this summer, especially if you get some rainfall. If you're looking at dove fields and you're wanting to hunt early dove season, so first part of September, you know, you got about 2 months, 60 days. So maturity for brown top or Japanese millet will kind of get you, if you plant it now, should get you to opening day. If you're looking for later season plots, pearl millet and sunflowers, they have a 70, 80 Some flowers will go to 100-day maturity. So that would be some later season when you're getting into some of your Thanksgiving hunts and that sort of thing. So look at maturity times on whatever seed that you're planting and time that out. Again, right now and coming up the next few weeks is a good time to put a lot of those in the ground if we get rainfall.
Yeah.
And while we're talking about food plots, one thing that I always recommend to let you see if you're getting usage on those food plots or if your food plot's just not growing. Because sometimes people say, well, I planted this plot and it just won't grow. I don't know what I'm doing wrong. We fertilized it. We were getting rainfall. And then we'll go in and we put what we call exclusion cages on these plots. And then come back in a week or so and all of a sudden everything in that cage is up to the top of the cage growing like crazy. And everything around it's really short because the deer are just hammering that plot. Yeah. But if you didn't have that in place, you would not know.
Yeah, people just think things aren't growing.
That's right.
Yep, we hear that a lot.
Yep.
And we were just riding around some places where my husband just put a lot of stuff in the ground. And we hadn't paid attention to this field in weeks. And he's like, nothing's growing. And I'm like, stop the ride. It is all deer browsed, yep. Every single bit of it.
Yep.
So.
It's crazy. And fun to watch those exclusion cages. And basically, you're just putting in like a wire cage that's, 2 feet around where the deer can't stick their head in it.
Yep, taller.
Yep, if you see they have a taller or it's got a top on it, if it's a little bit shorter so they can't reach over into it. And we use those a lot to see if stuff's coming up. Because when we tried planting alfalfa, the deer would find it. And before it would even come up.
Well, we were just talking about how important those fresh shoots are.
Yes.
For fawns. So when those fawns are hitting the ground is when those deer are really going to hammer those fields hard.
Yep. Yeah, we had a small plot 1 year we didn't think had germinated if we hadn't had an exclusion cage because there was nothing coming up. And by the time we came back, there was already little shoots on the ground, but the deer just found it and mowed it down.
Yep.
It's one of their favorite things. It's insane.
Yeah, we're working on fencing in our raised bed gardens now because they keep taking my cucumbers. Every time I say, I just probably need another day on that one.
Yep.
And I see the little hoof prints, and it's gone.
All the good stuff. They find it too.
Yep.
So once you've got your habitat in place, everything's looking good. You've got cover for your animals. You've got natural foods on the ground. Everything is great for growing critters. Then you want to do some supplemental things to help just really boost some of your populations. And for quail, one of the things that happens this time of year and during nesting season benefits both quail and turkeys and your ground nesting critters is predator management.
Yeah.
Lots of critters eat quail.
Yeah. Your habitat already has to be there.
Right. It's supplemental. That's key. So supplemental predator management this time of the year needs to be very intensive. It needs to be all during nesting season. So if you're trapping during trapping season or just for a few weeks at the beginning of the season, it's really not going to do you any good. You're basically creating a sink that allows predators to feed back in. All the predators that are on your neighbor's property or areas around realize that you've got a nice little buffet going on and they're just going to come back in and over time. So trapping from probably late March up until first part of October, if you're managing for quail. And it doesn't have to be every week. What we recommend is trapping until trap rate drops off. Stop for a couple of weeks and then come in and trap again. So you're allowing those critters to kind of come in.
So I'm going to bait you for a minute.
All right.
No pun intended. Why don't we trap year round?
No need to. We're not trying to do predator control and get rid of all the critters. One, you're never going to.
You're not. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and quail, turkeys, they all evolved with predation. That's what made them what they are. I just listened to a podcast with Dr. Rollins, and he was talking about, that was a couple months ago, predators and how they shaped quail.
Yeah.
You know, from their camouflage to how they act, sitting in their little circles at night with all the eyes facing out, and the way they flush. So predation is a natural part of it. So we don't have to control all of them. And they're just very vulnerable at this time of the year when they're sitting on a nest, or you've got, you know, it's a chick. So you're just trying to get that recruitment, those new animals, as many of them to survive as we possibly can. And what we've done over the years is create a better predator habitat than we have for the critters that we really want.
Yeah.
So now possums, raccoons, armadillos, all these things.
Especially this time of year.
Yes.
Because we're mowing and doing other things like that, that we're creating these artificial corridors that end up becoming ecological sinks.
Right. These hard edges.
That's our big word of the day, ecological sink. And hard edges. So we've done it.
Yep.
And it's a supplement thing to kind of make up for some of that.
Yeah. So what we're trying to do is just give quail a chance to get back ahead of all the predators we have. So, you know, we've, because of the management, the way we've done things for so many years, suppressing fire, keeping everything super clean, except in the bottomlands, which we let grow up like crazy, and because there was no fire. And so it's just better predator habitat. We put quail behind the eight ball.
Yeah.
So we're trying to level that playing field for them and give them a chance to survive. Because they already have really high mortality rates. And it's like 80% mortality rate in a year. So quail are very good at dying.
Yeah. Everything loves to eat them.
Yes.
Or chase them.
That's right. Give them a chance if quail is something that you like. And again, turkeys are big right now. So those little poults on the ground, they're very susceptible to things. Mm-hmm. I've seen trail camera footage of a hawk coming in, having been grabbed a poult, and a hen coming in and attacking that hawk because he's trying to fly off with the poult. So taking that cover away from them, too.
Yeah, and that's a bigger bird.
Yes.
To hide.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, turkeys are already on the decline. This is one of the things that I think is an issue, is a lot of predation on these poults. We're just not seeing the poult production that we should be seeing.
Yeah, and food availability. You know, talking about it again. Like, the more you're taking away, that's more food resources that are just scrunched into one small area. That it's like sharing a buffet table. You know, one of our worst fears when we host a meeting, a professional meeting, is that we run out of food.
That's right.
Because that's all anybody talks about. Oh, how was the meeting? Oh, they ran out of food. You could have like rock star content and no one will remember it.
That's right.
If you run out of food, it's the same thing. Like the buffet you're creating, if it's not enough for everybody, you're going to lose, you know?
And that's something that has come up recently with some of the turkey discussions is, and I may make a few people mad with this, so hold on.
Do it.
Deer baiting.
Ah.
So,
preach.
Oh, gosh.
Make it stop.
I know. Just
pigs.
I know that people want to draw their deer in, but putting corn in a feeder, and, you know, we've done it for the kids to get them, you know, just something to stop the deer. But we don't do it all year round because you wind up creating basically a predator sink.
That's right.
So your raccoons, your possums,
everything gets
all that's
to
coming
it.
In and eating that corn. So now they're having their babies nearby because that's an easy food source.
Mm-hmm.
But guess what? Your turkeys also will utilize that corn food source. Yep. And fawns, so deer may drop their fawns nearby, so coyotes makes it easier for them to find them, or your bobcats or whatever.
Yeah.
All these animals are now concentrated in. That buffet's now become just a small table where everybody's eating at the same little area.
And they're
And then they get eaten themselves.
Let's do a side quest for a second here and talk about some of these feeding stations for quail, some of the stuff we've seen and who it attracts.
Yes.
You know, snakes.
Lots of snakes.
You know, we've actually had to be careful refilling those because there were just so many snakes at them that we had to start wearing snake boots. But, you know, those snakes are getting the mice, which, you know, we're not as concerned, probably. Some of them, sorry, small mammal people. I love them, really. But, I mean, they're probably taking out birds.
Yeah.
The thing we're trying to help, we've created an issue for. Never mind the disease stuff.
Yeah, I'm not even going to go down the disease road, but that is a
hog.
Hogs.
Freaking feral hogs.
Hogs everywhere. And you know they take out nest.
Mm-hmm.
Turkey nest, quail nest, because hogs will eat anything.
Mm-hmm.
They eat each other. You know, I've seen where someone has shot a bobcat while they're sitting in the deer stand. All of a sudden, a herd of hogs came in, and they turned around and looked, and they had taken off their bobcat.
Yeah, not surprised.
And so hogs are horrible. We don't need them all in Ascabby. If they're not eating the nest, then they're just destroying the habitat and, you know, rooting up everything that makes it hard for the critters to live. So corn.
And a lot of people, you know, we get a lot of out-of-state hunters.
Yes.
That think that you can just come up here and dump
Yellow Brick Road
20 bags of corn or probably more. And just think about it. It just sits there and it festers. It gets all this stuff growing in it. If you're going to do it, take care of it. Be smart about it. You know, you can't just dump and run because it's not going to accomplish anything.
It's like bringing in thistles. I've seen where people dump, you know, and there's all kinds of trash seed in a lot of this corn.
Mm-hmm.
It's not very clean a lot of times, especially the deer corn. And so all that invasive seed comes in on it. So just be careful with that sort of thing. That's just kind of my rant on supplemental feeding with corn. Here and there is fine. Move your feeders around to reduce disease issues and not get critters quite as acclimated to being in one area.
I mean, it's great to encourage movement. You get a pattern of movement. You know, you can absolutely do that.
Right.
But to think that it's going to, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, deer are browsers. I've seen a few types of feed where they'll just sit there and gorge themselves. But most of the time with corn, all they're going to come in, they're going to munch a little bit, and they're moving on.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just the way the deer feed. But if you want to feed, you know, natural foods or your food plots will provide a lot better nutrient value for does that are lactating. She needs a lot of good nutritional food to produce milk. And then your bucks are growing your antlers this time of the year. So high quality forages, something with a lot of protein and calcium, that's going to allow them to grow. If you want the big bucks and that's what you're after, you need to be feeding those guys this time of year and really pushing that forward. I see a lot of people do kind of the deer chow type of thing that's got a lot of the minerals and stuff in it. And, you know, up in a standing feeder where hogs and stuff can't get to it. And that's fine. We've used it before. It'll definitely bring them in, let you see what you've got going on. But I don't think that's just to be what you're mainly focused on, is just providing that supplemental food source.
Yeah, because when it comes down to it, really the best groceries are the native plants. After you thin that, you know, thin the woods, get some light coming down to the ground, you start seeing that natural growth. Hopefully you're burning to burn some of that stuff off so the seed bank can thrive. I mean, that's your high nutrition. That's your best groceries right there. And it's serving a lot of different purposes, not just... And it's cheap, you know, once you get it going. I mean, that's a set it and forget it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you just, it's really easy to burn part of your property, you know, about half of it every year. And then that new regenerative growth is the best thing you could actually have. You know, there's a lot of people on the deer management side of things that are recommending some growing season burns, just some small, like quarter acre or like circular plots that are burned in your hardwoods or in your pines during those early summer months, because that growth then comes in and that new palatable growth, they'll seek it out, and that's the best stuff for all that antler growth and their lactating deer.
And it's also, you know, there's a lot of controversy with burning this time of year and turkey nests and turkeys, and, you know, we need to turn that noise off. You know, burning is good. It was natural. And that is the best bugging habitat I've seen.
Oh, gosh.
If you want to see some turkeys going after a burn, and they are just out there, you know.
I think turkeys see smoke and just they run to it.
Mm-hmm.
But insects are also attracted to new growth because it's that nice succulent. It's easier for especially plant feeding insects. And so they go into that new growth as well. And so more bugs means more food for quail and turkeys. So, yes, you know, all these critters in our area evolved with annual or every 2 year burn cycles. And it wasn't small burns usually with a lightning strike. I mean, it could be hundreds and thousands of acres, just depending on, you know, what it ran into, you know, whether it rained, what the humidity and all was. It might be patchy, so it may have worked its way around. So it was different than what we do now, where we try and burn everything.
Black.
Right.
Yeah.
But fire was always there. There was going to be something that got burned up.
Other things that are nesting this time of year, it's kind of fun and deviates a little bit from what we've been talking about, but the turtles.
Yes.
They're on the move. We're getting lots of calls and messages about, I found a turtle nest. What do I do? You know, and leave it alone is the answer. If you're worried about it, you can put a little mesh cage over it, chicken wire cage, and watch it.
Flag it so you know not to run over it when you mow or whatever.
Yeah, but I mean, that's also another part of the conversation too, is keeping that bare ground for turtles.
Yeah.
It's important to them too. And they also, tortoises, they love a good food plot.
Yes. All the guys get angry because now they have a big burrow on the side of their plots. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times those food plots are the only spot that there's good sunshine on the ground.
That's right.
Because the woods around them are overgrown. That's right.
Yeah. So if you open it up, I mean, we've seen it happen. You open up the woods next to it. Again, good groceries start growing because light is hitting the ground. Those tortoises will lay off the food plot because they know the better food is in what's growing. Oh, wait. Yep. What?
Yeah.
So do the tortoises know where the better food is?
Yeah, imagine that.
Huh.
Follow the tortoise, right?
Follow the tortoise, yes.
Yeah. They're old and wise. So there's a lot of different things you can be doing this time of the year. You don't have to try to do everything at one time. Break it up. I always tell people, you know, you're doing this like eating an elephant. You don't want to do it one bite at a time. So don't overwhelm yourself trying to just manage everything, especially if you're starting out and you're kind of behind in your management. And then you've got most of your stands are overgrown or you haven't been burning for a while. Don't try to just take on everything, especially if you've got a larger property.
Ask for help.
Right. And with a larger property, usually we'll start with those easy things to take care of so that they don't get behind as well. So start with those easy spots and then work into your harder things and spread out as you go. And then the rest of it's in a maintenance phase. I can't talk today. Maintenance phase so that's easier to manage. And then work on those troublesome areas. Reach out to your biologist. Let them get you a plan and that'll help you.
Prescribed burn associations. You know, that they're great to get involved in, and that's usually a group of people that are willing to help you. Or, you know, have an event out at your place. They've held invasive species workshops at people's places that have helped them learn to identify what's there and also helps the people who attend then translate that onto their property.
Mm-hmm. Learning burns.
Yep.
You know, they're always looking for landowners to host a learning burn to teach other people, and, you know, then you get your area burned, and it's good practice for a landowner, especially one who's not been doing it for a while. So looking for a lot of those opportunities. But while you're out there and you're seeing all the critters running around this time of year, a lot of the agencies are looking for citizens to report what they're seeing and when.
Yep.
So if you're seeing turkeys, the turkey poults, June, July, and August are poult survey times. You can get with Georgia DNR, or if you're in another state, your local DNR, I'm sure they're doing some sort of surveys. But
yeah, a lot of states are doing them right now.
So this is that time of year. Yeah. So there's a way you can report that on your phone as you see them. Bob White's, same way.
Bobscapes.
Bobscapes.org,
BOBSCAPES.org. It's an app for your phone. I also know that South Carolina just launched something, an online form. They're looking for sightings in other states.
Yep.
Bobscapes covers all the states, but some states have their own.
Yeah. So there's a lot of things, and, you know, this doesn't go public, so if you're worried about telling someone where you're seeing stuff.
Data is safe.
Right.
It will not go public. No hot spotting.
That's right. But it does help the agencies know where animals are, how many animals. It helps us with population surveys. So we kind of figure out what our populations are doing year to year.
Well, it helps focus population, and then it helps those agencies help landowners.
That's right. You know? Where to put those resources where you have animals. And sometimes may not realize that we've got a decent population in an area, and that helps notify people that are doing the management that this needs attention. And there's a lot of other critters. I mean, you can look out. Monarch butterflies, they're surveying stuff like that. Yeah. You know, pollinator surveys coming up. This is pollinator week while we're recording now. So a lot of different things that are going on for citizen science. So you can reach out and find out those opportunities to report frogs and birds and everything else this time of the year.
Yeah, eBird is great if you get into birding. iNaturalist is another great place where people are. And, you know, a lot of researchers are using that information. State agencies use that information. Fish and Wildlife Service uses that to educate on listening decisions and, again, to just figure out where to put resources. So a lot of this is people don't realize, like, a lot of conservation efforts that are put forward by state agencies or federal agencies is based on interest.
Right.
So if we have landowners and have people that are interested in help in conserving what's around them or expressing the need for X, Y, and Z program, that's where we put it. Because we know we have interested people that are bought in that want to do it. So definitely report. And, you know, this is also the time you're going to start seeing notices for public meetings.
Yes, as you get ready. And
so
regulations.
Regulations are getting ready to turn over. Some states are working on the state wildlife action plans. Right now, there's a lot of stuff going on out there that they need the public's input on.
Right. And it's just like with anything, you know, if you don't provide input, then don't complain when it doesn't go the way you want it to.
Mm-hmm.
So this is your voice, gives you a chance to get out there and, you know, feel like you're helping.
Yep.
I mean, you can get kids involved with citizen science reporting. The kids love to go,
get
on there and report this sort of thing. We saw this. And then you get them engaged and, you know, in learning what the critters are.
Well, you know, you get so many kids that love the phone. They're on the phone.
Right.
So with some things, I've just had to give up on and put a couple key apps on the phone. So one is a rock identification app.
Right.
Kind of got mad at the plant ID because he started to figure out some of them were wrong. But then the bird identification app, my 6-year-old, well, now 7, loves Merlin.
Yes, that's great.
And that is something I can get behind if they want to grab my phone and use my phone or put on their phones.
It's great for adults, too, man.
It
helps me remember or learn new birds and, you know.
But it builds that appreciation.
Yep. Lots of great opportunities out there. Get out, do some work on your property, except for mowing. Stay away from the mower, park that. And
I'm about to come pull some of your spark plugs out there.
That's right.
Don't make me do it.
She will, too. Just watch out.
Drives me nuts.
But if you have, again, if you have questions, just reach out. And somebody definitely has the information that you need to get the management done. And until next time, we'll see you on Facebook or wherever.
Wherever you find us.
That's right. Wherever we're at now. I don't know. I can't keep track.
If you reach out to us, we'll send you a sticker. So let us know you're out there. And
Yep. Like, subscribe. We appreciate it. And hopefully we'll get back on a regular schedule. Thank y'all.